nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
All right. Thanks to the organizers. So it's a great pleasure to be here. And I would like to now completely change gears and tell you about quantum computing with noisy qubits and a concept that I like to call quantum algorithmic break-even. So let's start off with a very simple idea, the idea of a quantum speed-up. So imagine that you had an ideal quantum computer that was executing a quantum algorithm that is supposed to give us an exponential speed-up. So something like quantum simulation, which we're going to hear about in subsequent talks. So in the ideal case, if there's no decoherence, and if you were to plot something like the time to solution, the time it takes the quantum computer to find the solution to the problem in some arbitrary units which are getting very large here on a log scale, versus problem size, which is the number of qubits, if everything was working perfectly and we had a quantum speed up, the quantum computer would, let's say, have polynomial scaling, and the classical algorithm for the same problem, whatever it is, would have exponential scaling, and things would look like this. All right, so we would see a quantum scaling advantage that was clear for all problem sizes n. But in the presence of decoherence, and I should say this behavior has never been observed so far on quantum hardware, of course we're all hoping for it, in the presence of decoherence, what will happen is that the quantum curve is going to shift upwards like this. Maybe the exponential scaling is not as dramatic. And perhaps the reason that we haven't seen a quantum speed-up like this yet on quantum hardware is, well, we might be in this region here, where quantum is worse than classical. Right? Or perhaps we're here, maybe with more decoherence. Maybe this is what's going on, and the reason we haven't seen a speed-up. Right? It could even be like this, that there's too much decoherence, in which case there's a quantum disadvantage or a quantum slowdown. The quantum curve is actually worse than the classical curve. It could even get worse than that. There could be a quantum blow-up. Right? It could be that the quantum computer is just not capable at all of solving a problem beyond a certain size, and then the time it takes it to find the solution goes to infinity. Okay. So let's have a look at a recent series of experiments that we did involving the D-Wave machines, which I'll talk some more about, but now I just want to give you a flavor. So let's look at an attempt to try to find a speed up. And this is using the D-Wave 2000Q with more than 2000 qubits versus the well-known technique, classical technique of simulated annealing, classical algorithm. And the problem we looked at was to try to find the ground state of a certain family of hard spin glass instances with up to 2048 spins. And these really are hard problems in the sense that I don't think you can solve them in your head. At least I can't solve them in my head. I won't tell you what they are. I'll just show you the results of these studies. And this involves millions of experiments that were done on the D-Wave machine at NASA. This is the D-Wave 2000Q. And what you're looking at is the summary of all these millions of experiments, the time to solution in microseconds on a log scale, versus the number of spins or qubits. And what we're comparing here is the scaling averaged over these millions of experiments. D-Wave is the blue curve. Simulated annealing is the red curve. And here is the fit to exponential scaling. And the exponent B is the thing we're after. We're trying to see if there's a speed up. And indeed, in these experiments, what we found for specially crafted hard spin glass instances, we found, for the first time, evidence of a speed-up on a quantum annealer, the D-Wave, versus simulated annealing with single spin updates. All right, so you see that here. The error bars are 95% confidence intervals, so this is 2 sigma confidence. And you see that the scaling exponent for D-Wave on these problems is actually better than for simulated annealing. That's the first time that we've seen a speed-up of this type or scaling advantage of this type. Now, this seems like an instance of maybe this green curve here or maybe the red curve or something like that. But, unfortunately, we have to dig deeper and we have to try not just against one classical algorithm, we have to try against in principle, all classical algorithms, or ideally against the best classical algorithm. And when we do that, we find that while simulated annealing is a great generic algorithm, there are better algorithms out there for these spin loss problems. And in particular, if we look at what's called spin vector Monte Carlo, which is essentially a classical model of the D-wave machine, or if we look at simulated quantum annealing, which is quantum Monte Carlo, that is a quantum algorithm running on a classical computer that is a model of the D-wave machine, both of these algorithms beat D-wave for these problem types. And specifically, simulated quantum annealing, again, quantum Monte Carlo, is the best algorithm that we found for this class of spin loss problems, and it has the best scaling. All right, so we have an example here of, unfortunately, after all, it looks more like the purple curve than the green or the red curve for the D-wave machine. So what's going on? Why is there no speed up? Well, the D-wave quantum annealers are noisy intermediate scale quantum era devices, NISQ era devices, right? They're indeed noisy, and they're not alone in that sense. So here's a completely different experiment that we ran on the IBM QX5, which is the 16-qubit open source cloud-based version of the IBM quantum computer. And here we looked at the fidelity of a single qubit. So this is trying to preserve the state of a single qubit, an arbitrary state. This is averaged over many different states and over all 16 qubits. Again, lots and lots of experiments go into generating this data. And you see, here's another example of a NISQ error device. And here, this is for a single qubit. The fidelity drops very rapidly. And that doesn't seem so good. But what we can do is we can apply a simple error correction technique, actually an error suppression technique, known as dynamical decoupling. It's actually a close cousin of the spin echo effect. And with dynamical decoupling, with this error suppression method, we're able to improve the fidelity of preserving the state of an arbitrary state of a single qubit significantly for some amount of time until we get to this break-even point where doing dynamical decoupling no longer helps relative to doing nothing. Okay, so we're dealing with NISQ error devices. They're noisy, they decohere. Maybe they have an advantage over some classical algorithms, but not others. But the point is that with error correction, we can achieve an improvement. So how well can we do with error correction? Well, let me go back to my cartoons for a second. So with error correction, let's say we try to do the same thing. We try to demonstrate an exponential quantum speedup, for example, for quantum simulation. Now, there is decoherence, but we throw in some error correction. So what's going to happen? Ideally, this is what will happen. We'll take the uncorrected, less underperforming quantum scaling, and we'll bend it back down, and ideally, it will become better than classical again. Right? So this is with error correction. The quantum scaling advantage returns, and this is what I would call algorithmic success with quantum error correction. The corrected quantum scaling is better than both the uncorrected quantum and the classical scaling. But this kind of a phenomenon would be the holy grail. Right? If we could do this, that's a home run. Quantum beats classical with enough quantum error correction. And this is extremely challenging to achieve. So what I want to propose is a more modest version of this idea. Instead of trying to bend the uncorrected quantum curve all the way down below classical, I just bend it a little bit so that corrected quantum beats uncorrected quantum. All right, so in other words, let's try to get to the point where introducing quantum error correction is actually beneficial. So this is this notion that I'm proposing we should focus on, which I would like to call algorithmic break-even with quantum error correction. All right, so it's a little bit like the notion of quantum supremacy. It's an intermediate milestone. It's not the end goal. The end goal is to bend the curve all the way down. But it's going to be a very important intermediate step to demonstrate that with quantum error correction, we can do better than without quantum error correction. All right, so what is algorithmic break-even? I define it as the situation where the corrected quantum scaling on a non-trivial algorithm is better than the uncorrected quantum scaling, but not necessarily better than the classical scaling. Okay, so now the question is, can we achieve this with existing quantum hardware? Right? And I wish to argue that the answer is yes, that we can do this with existing quantum annealing hardware. And to explain that, first I have to give you a brief primer on the D-wave processors, because that's what we're going to use. So what are the D-wave processors? Those are programmable quantum annealers. They're designed to solve optimization problems. You can also use them for sampling. But originally they were proposed to solve to find the ground state of Ising-Spinglass Hamiltonians. So here's an Ising-Spinglass. There's a sum over local magnetic fields and a sum over coupling, right? So single qubit sigma z in qubit-qubit interactions, sigma z with couplings jij. The spins are, classically, they're plus or minus one, but promote them to quantum variables. They're the Pauli sigma z matrices. And the question is, what is the minimizing spin configuration, or what is the minimum energy for a given set of H's and J's, which are programmable on the D-wave device? And the method of solution is to, in principle, adiabatically evolve under the transverse field Ising Hamiltonian. So that's this Hamiltonian here. You start with a transverse field with sigma x. This function A starts high and gets turned down. The function B starts from zero and gets turned up. So in other words, we are supposed to evolve from the ground state of the transverse field to the ground state of the Ising Hamiltonian. If we do this adiabatically, we stay in the ground state the whole time, and our device finds the answer, the ground state of the Ising Hamiltonian. So there have been four generations so far of these D-wave devices, starting with the D-wave 1, which had 128 qubits, all the way up now to the 2000Q, which has more than 2000 qubits. And here are the various institutions that that have these devices. So we'll focus primarily on the last three. And let me tell you a bit more about the D-wave devices. They use these evil, according to Charlie, niobium flux qubits. The qubits are depicted here as the red circles in the so-called chimera graph, this chimera architecture. Each qubit is coupled to up to six other qubits. The graph itself is divided into unit cells. So let me call the number of unit cells the linear dimension L. So there's L by L unit cells and eight qubits per unit cell. Total number of qubits is 8L squared, except some of them don't yield. So that's why you see these empty circles here. Not every qubit is actually a functional qubit in these devices. The T1 and T2 times are on the order of 10 to 100 nanoseconds. The annealing time, the time it takes you to perform a single run, is at least 1 microsecond. So those numbers are a little bit worrisome, because it looks like the ratio isn't that great. And this is a good discussion topic, because one has to be careful in interpreting this. The minimum gap of the Hamiltonian, of the transverse field Ising Hamiltonian, can be much smaller than the temperature, which here I'm listing the temperature of the dilution fridge, which is 10 millikelvin. So that means you can have significant thermal excitations. And in addition, the Hamiltonian being implemented is so-called stochastic, which means it does not have a sign problem, doesn't have a fermionic sign problem, which means that in many cases there exist efficient classical simulations using quantum Monte Carlo, as I showed you earlier. So these are to be held against the D-wave processors. It means that they're not all that quantum. They're somewhat quantum. And exactly how to quantify somewhat, of course, is a very interesting question. I won't get into it unless people are interested later. So the way I see these D-wave devices is they are not to be understood as useful quantum computers in any sense, but they are a wonderful experimental test bed for what you can do with noisy qubits and error correction. All right, so that's how I understand how we should think of these devices. They're an early experiment in noisy quantum computation. Okay, so I advertise that we now have evidence of algorithmic break-even with these devices. So here's the specific experiments that are the first indication of this. Let's say we want to find the ground state without a local magnetic field, just interactions with couplings chosen from this specific set. randomly chosen on the chimera graph in increments of plus or minus 1/6. And the experiments were run several years ago on the D-Wave 2 device that had 503 functional qubits at USC. So here's what you get for the time to solution, that is the time to find the ground state, measured in terms of the number of annealing cycles. Each annealing cycle on that device took 20 microseconds, as a function of the number of physical qubits, square root, because the relevant dimension is just the linear dimension, the number of unit cells per column, let's say. So this is the time to solution shown for different percentiles, right? So the 95th percentile are the hardest problems. We did 1,000 problems each run many, many times with randomly chosen J's. The median is the yellow curve and so on, right? So the higher you go, the harder the problems became. This is without doing error correction. What happens when we introduce error correction? This happens. Right, so with error correction, the scaling has improved. So this is exactly what I meant earlier when I said an example of algorithmic break-even, right? We've taken a non-trivial computational problem, we put it on a quantum annealer, we introduced a type of error correction, which I won't get into because I don't have time, but there's a little cartoon here, and ask me about it later if you'd like. So it's a type of error correction that we designed specifically to be compatible with the D-Wave devices, and we see an improvement in scaling.
It's all classical, right?
Yeah. No, the error correction is not classical. The error correction actually is modifies the quantum gap. So there's two parts to it. There is an error suppression, which is quantum, and there's an active error correction step, which is, if you'd like, classical in the sense that it's just the majority vote decoding. But it's basically a stabilizer code. It's the bit flip stabilizer code introduced into a quantum Hamiltonian. And there's a whole other talk on why this is a quantum type of error suppression method. All right. So bottom line, we improve the scaling in solving a hard optimization problem using this technique. Okay, so now I'd like to take this a step further. This was work that we did several years ago. And let's see if we can deal with what's called J-chaos in the spin glass community. So what is J-chaos? So here's the Hamiltonian again. Transverse field Ising. All right, here's the transverse field. Here's the Ising. Ideally, you would program exact values for the H's and the J's. But in reality, because this is an analog device, there are some additional analog errors, right? And so, in fact, while you thought you were programming H and J, you get some delta H and some delta J. And the value of the intrinsic noise on these deltas, delta H and delta J, this has been characterized, and it's known that they're normally distributed with some zero mean and some standard deviation eta. And it turns out that at least on the D-Wave 2X chip, the one that has 1,000 or so qubits, the value of delta H relative to H max and delta J is, the standard deviation is about 3%. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make this problem even harder. We're going to add artificial Gaussian noise. We can just do that by, instead of programming the true value of H, we're going to artificially program it wrong with some extra error, which I'm calling eta. Right, so the intrinsic eta is 3%. We're going to add more of this Gaussian noise. Right, so we're going to take additional noise in this range, all the way up to an extra 15%. So what does this mean? It means that the device is not seeing the actual Ising problem that you were trying to solve. It never does. It already has this intrinsic error. It actually sees a different problem. Right? And so the question is, can it solve the problem that you ideally wanted it to solve, even though you're feeding it the wrong problem? In other words, the implemented Hamiltonian is not equal to the intended Hamiltonian. So can we still find the right solution of the intended Hamiltonian? Okay, that seems almost impossible, but actually, this is the result without error correction. It still does an okay sort of job. Here is, again, the time to solution as a function of the number of unit cells. All right, so 12 unit cells equals 1,152 qubits. And these curves are now sorted by increasing amount of J chaos. So the worst of them experiences quantum blow-up, right? At sizes at more than 9 unit cells, the device never finds the right solution. And you see how the scaling, as we increase the amount of J chaos, the scaling becomes super exponential, worse than exponential. There's a curvature here on this log-Lin plot. So that's without error correction. What happens when we introduce this error correction method? Once again, the scaling is reduced, and now the quantum blow-up disappears. Actually, solutions are found even at the highest amount of extra noise added. Right? And most importantly, the scaling has gone down in all cases. Right? So this is a more substantial demonstration of this notion of algorithmic break-even. We're able to take a hard problem, we made it even harder, by deliberately kind of scrambling it. And with this simple error correction technique, error suppression and correction, we're able to improve the scaling. So now the question is, how good is the scaling? So we'd like to extract the true scaling that we see here. So it might occur to you that these curves can be collapsed. And indeed they can. We're going to do a data collapse and extract the finites as scaling from the data collapse. And so here's what we see. If we do a collapse, we fit to this function here. It has super exponential scaling, right? So L to the power D here inside the exponential. This is without error correction. This is the scaled log of the number of repetitions or log of the time to solution scaled by this factor here in the exponent as a function of problem size. And you see that all these different noise values collapse nicely onto a single curve. And what are the parameters of this curve? Again, without error correction, the crucial one is this second exponent D, and D is 2.15. Now that's very bad. Why? Because it turns out that you can show that there exists a deterministic classical algorithm which will always solve these problems deterministically, and it will never take more than exponential of some coefficient psi times L squared. All right, so I can deterministically solve any one of these problems in a time that goes like exponential of L squared. And here, without error correction, it takes exponential of L to the power 2.15. So this is worse than classical, for sure, without error correction. However, if I take these curves that I showed you here and I data collapse them, they also collapse very nicely, even more nicely. But now the exponent has gone down to 1.74, which is less than 2. All right, so with error correction, we're able to improve on the scaling such that it beats the classical upper bound. Now, we don't know what the lower bound is. Right? If we knew that, then that would be a home run for classical algorithms. We just don't know what the best classical algorithm, what is the optimal classical algorithm for solving these spin glass problems. But at least this error correction restores hope in the performance of these devices, even in the presence of this very bad analog noise. Okay, so more hope. We're also working on a completely different approach to quantum annealing. As I mentioned, there's a list of complaints one can level against a D-wave design. The qubits aren't that coherent. The connectivity is not that great. They're stochastic, and so on and so on. So IARPA has funded a new program, or not so new anymore, called the QEO, or Quantum Enhanced Optimization Program, of which I'm the PI, and with a large number of participating institutions. And our goal under the IARPA program, it started almost 2 years ago now, is to take a lot of the lessons that we learned from analyzing the D-wave machines and try to start over and build devices that are more coherent using not evil, niobium, but much nicer aluminum, with built-in quantum error correction and suppression. Exactly how we're going to do that, I'm not going to talk about yet, but it is going to be built-in. And the goal is essentially the same, ultimately, which is to demonstrate that we can achieve quantum advantage or quantum speed-up for solving quantum optimization and sampling problems. And at this point, what I can share with you is that we have characterized our first qubits. These are capacitively shunted flux qubits, manufactured at Lincoln Labs, measured by our partner Northrop Grumman at Lincoln Labs. And this is very preliminary results on essentially the quality of our single qubits. So you see here the T2 and the T1 measurement, and they're roughly 4 microseconds each. So that's a lot better than the 10 to 100 nanosecond numbers that we know the D-wave qubits satisfy. The coupling strength is on the order of 2 gigahertz, so that's a good relative coupling strength to these T1 and T2 times. And for details, you can look at this archive reference. Okay, so let me sum up. I have proposed this notion of quantum algorithmic breakeven. Again, it's a sort of intermediate goal for quantum computation in the same spirit as quantum supremacy. It's not the end goal. It's an important intermediate milestone, in my opinion. It is to demonstrate an error-corrected scaling that is better than the uncorrected scaling on a non-trivial computational problem, like a hard optimization problem. I've tried to convince you that this is already achievable in quantum annealing, and I view this as an invitation to the gate model community. Thanks.